How would you like to be able to close high-end deals? Paul Scribner will tell us how. He is a global investment strategist, the CEO of Raven Resources Corporation, strategic dealmaker, financial innovator, and value creation expert. So, Paul, tell us about your experience closing high-end deals and high-ticket deals, and how did you start doing it? Tell us about your journey of how you started doing this, and what results did you achieve in the process?
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Thanks for having me. And my first boss working at an investment bank in Tulsa, Oklahoma, said, if you raise $1 million in 1 week, I will train you personally. I will move you to England. And I think the implication was I'll change your life for the better. I didn't know much about, if anything, about raising money. And I just thought I've got to call everyone I know, and ultimately ended up closing that deal. But that was the starting point of me. I mean, because I'd never closed anything, raising $1 million was a lot of money. And now I know in modern deal structures, $1 million is not a lot of money, but it is very hard money to raise when you haven't done it before. And when that early money on a deal oftentimes is the hardest. So that was my first experience in starting my journey of closing high value deals.
Thank you. Tell us, what's the blueprint for an entrepreneur who wants to close high end deals?
I built my particular career on kind of the tenets of moving fast, staying credible, and doing my best to never lose control of the narrative, the frame, whether it's a capital raise or a cross-border partnership. I try to keep clarity in the chaos. I realize that moving fast and having that expectation, that communication cadence may not be, that might be at odds with your counterpart in a deal, but I think that it does establish credibility. And if you're making decisions quickly, you can at least then communicate internally and to your side, your side of this deal as fast as possible, and then plan your strategy for communication on to your counterpart when their communication cadences may be different than yours.
Thank you. What is different in terms of closing high-end deals versus lower ticket deals? What needs to happen there in terms of credibility, branding, or simply like your entire, like, strategy, so that you actually not just gain interest from, you know, hundreds of people, but you actually close the deal? It's not just like a deal that people are interested in and never really pans out.
I think, I mean, there's a lot there that you asked me in two or three different disciplines that we could be whole podcasts in and of themselves, not implying with me. I'm just saying you hit a lot of things that people better than me can address. But what I can address is that I found that conviction is so important. Things that are basic, things that are extra or luxury items in a closing with smaller ticket deals are basic and understood that they're going to be there. Like, do you have a third party financial analysis? Basic stuff on a high end deal. If you're asking them for an investment, that's my assumption here. Do you have an auditor? Do you have high quality presentation materials? These types of things are basic things to a high end buyer. And sometimes in a lower end deal, it is just maybe the money, maybe the budget's not there to prepare it. Maybe the team doesn't have the expertise in preparing collateral items that are at that level. And it's not, I'm just hitting on one aspect of what you asked me about the branding side of it. And I think it's key to make sure that you're not over talking and trying to convince a high-end buyer because they're looking to interact with people. I've already touched on it a second ago with conviction, and they're not trying to over explain the deal with a pitch deck or a bunch of features and benefits about the product.
Thank you. How can someone close a high-end deal quickly without sounding or looking desperate? Because I imagine that when you have a high-end deal, a lot of the time it takes a little bit longer. But you can contradict me on that because you've closed a lot of high-end deals. Is it that a lot of times it takes quite a lot of time? Is it months? Is it you know, like, because people need to do their due diligence and due process? Or you can contradict me and say, actually, no, a lot of high-end deals happen really fast, and this is what needs to be done to make it happen.
And I've closed a few high-end deals, by the way. Not, you know, so many, but and I think this is going to be my point. There's not an easy way to close them, and there's not a quick way to close them. There are things that you always need to do, but they're most always going to be hard, and they're always going to take longer than you expect, and they're likely going to cost more money than you expected to expend to get to this particular closing. I think there are types of deals that exist way above my level of deals that are probably do happen quickly as to the decision amongst the decision makers. But then it goes to documentation. So I think that, you know, trying to zero in on your answer, I don't think there is a way, an easy way, at least in the mid-level of high-end deals that I work in, an easy way to do them quickly. Another thing that you ask about the desperation, that you hit on such a great point. And I think when you go into the boardroom and you're pitching, buyers, investors sniff this weakness. They can immediately almost identify, even before you speak, whether or not you're desperate. And I think this is hard to discharge. I think a lot of deals are messed up by the pre-meeting amongst the founders, or like, if you're not ready, if you still need a pre-meeting, you're not ready to go in and pitch. And I think weaknesses are exposed by that lack of preparation. And then investors will then just often not say anything, or the buyer, you have a long decision, the long no, the dreaded long no is oftentimes because they felt that you were desperate.
Thank you. How can an entrepreneur become an effective sales closer of high-end deals when he really is desperate and has commission breath, you know, like has that desperation of, you know, I have to close this deal, otherwise my company's going to suffer this month and I can't.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that at that point, consider getting someone else to pitch. Consider getting someone else in the room with you. And I realize that sometimes founders, entrepreneurs don't have that someone else. I'm not talking about a relative either. I'm not talking about, but someone that can be in the, even if they're in the room, just as a person to support the pitching process. Hopefully they're obviously involved in your company, they know you, and there's a credible reason for them being there. I'm just saying, I think at that point they should consider not being the one speaking.
Thank you. What's different in terms of the environment of closing high-end deals? Is it that you would need to consider entertaining your potential, you know, investors or your potential, you know, people, buyers in a different way than you're used to, like taking them out to the Ritz, or I don't know, you have to invest in that kind of entertainment, I don't know, giving them tickets to football, or I don't know. Is there something that needs to change dramatically in terms of like making yourself be part of that wealthy environment? And only there you can like gradually, slowly start, you know, talking about the thing you actually want to talk about. Or tell us what the process looks like. Is it a lot different than actually closing a normal deal?
I think so, because I think you're often dealing with, talking about the entertainment aspect of it. I think it just depends on who you are to that person, and what I think we want to be careful of is not trying to pretend it, if we're selling to a high-end, ultra high net worth person, as an example, is there, since we on the sell side want something from them, and in this case it's money, or if we're selling a high-end product, what can we give them that they don't already have or couldn't get for themselves? So I think you have to really evaluate whether you try to give them things while you try to entertain. The best thing you can give them is a clear and concise answer to solve whatever problem or solution that they're coming to you for. Deliver it quickly, promptly, and set yourself up to do that. If they are seeking a kind of a more exciting relationship in a sales process, then consider carefully what you give. Make sure that it is definitely something that they want. And I also think that simple things, talking about simple things to high-end buyers, is what they like more than talking about things that they know that they can surpass you in. And I think oftentimes the venue is just simply the office, the boardroom. High-end buyers are there to do business, buy stuff or sell stuff, and stick to the point, do your job, and don't lie. Don't try to pretend that you're something you're not.
Thank you. How does someone transition from, let's say I meet you in an ultra wealthy environment where everyone is wealthy there. Mm-hmm. And how do I transition from this like fun environment where at a golf course, or a race course, or a polo match, or a cigar club? How do I transition from, let's say, meeting you and you're this ultra high profile guy that potentially we could collaborate on so many different things? And how do I not like be like, oh, I have this and this and I can help you with this, and be much in your face with the offer that I may have, so I can become ultra smooth in terms of I can help you with this and add value from the very beginning?
Sure. I think that's a great question. The transition between the cigar lounge and then it, don't pitch at the cigar lounge. You smoke cigars at the cigar lounge. If the buyer asks you about what you do, then briefly tell them. And if there's a second level of question, then perhaps ask that person, is there someone in their organization that makes the decision on that particular thing? Not assuming that as the seller, we will be interacting with the highest decision maker. Let them ask you into their inner circle, as far as whatever their inner circle is on a decision-making process, if they have an organization, or if it's just a single high net worth person that you're selling to, then obviously you're dealing directly with them. But I think the deference of just understanding even if you're selling a product for their house, they may have a person that makes those decisions, and be willing to operate inside their decision framework and respect that, and that will go a long way.
Thank you. What's the best way to communicate urgency in a high-end deal in a way that you don't put off the high-end buyer?
There's no way to do it. You cannot talk about time frames. It will only put off the high-end buyer. They're only buying on their time frame. They don't care about coupons, vouchers, discounts, or anything on the other side. So it just doesn't exist. And you will only destroy your credibility. You just have to ask them, what is the decision time frame that you anticipate making a decision? What's the process and the time frame? Then once they answer that, you can ask them a question. Is it a problem if I follow up with the person in this time if we don't hear anything back? At least you've established psychologically that you will be in touch, but I don't see any other way to do it. If someone knows, write us and tell me, because I'd love to know, because it's a very hard issue. Because you go into deals needing to sell, having a time frame. Like to your great point earlier, you've got to meet payroll and you're trying to close, but the only thing it does is mess with your credibility and then potentially mess up. It creates an environment where the buyer will just give you a no to stop your request for information.
Thank you. So how does someone, let's say, go from, you know, the cigar lounge, the, you know, this pleasant, entertaining environment into an actual discussion about what we can collaborate together? Is it that you, as the person who could potentially collaborate, you would come forward first and you would find a way to add value? And if yes, how do you even do it without becoming too forward?
I think you have to place yourself in context of why you're there in the cigar lounge with that person. If you are there and they are there and it was intended that everyone be there for this kind of networking, not networking like you're handing out business cards, but if networking is acceptable there, then I think it's okay just to talk about what you do. And if they, this is going back to my other answer on this, I think if they ask you a second level question, then I think it's very, like, you work hard on quickly describing what you do. And then if they ask you another level, then you have a second thing that you say that then is a type of call to action. And then at that point, you'll hear a response on whether or not they feel like there is a need or a desire for whatever you're selling.
Thank you. I noticed that every time I speak to really wealthy people, and because my intention is always to help, and I remember at parties sometimes I say, what do you need support with? And I found that this question actually puts them off, because they tend to say, I don't need anything. And I know that's not true, because I know that I can help with so many different things that they actually do need, that you can, it's very obvious they need. But it's like, I think it's perhaps just a wrong way of asking the question. How would this question come across a lot better? What would need to be different so you can transition into this thing about, okay, let me see how I can be of use, of support, of, you know, what do you need right now?
That I understand that question well, and it does land differently on ears of others. And cross-culturally, that question doesn't land. It might land great in rural England, it may not land as well in Mayfair, as an example. And it probably would land great in the Southwest part of America, in LA, you would probably get like, I don't need anything, or like, who are you anyway to ask? So I think you have to set it in a cultural context where you're at. And I think coming across like you do want to help can be fine without voicing the fact that asking them to say exactly what they need. I've also done, and I don't particularly use that question, but I'm aware of it. And I've talked with others about it. And I think sometimes it depends on the personality again of the other person. I've also done or suggested others do something like this. You probably don't need anything. And like where you validate their, and you say, yeah, I mean, it's not true, but it's at least their framework about themselves. You validate that. You say that you recognize they're already operating at highest levels. You would love to get the opportunity to do some things with them and to help them in any way. And I think that's an open door. If they bat that down, then you may not want them as a client anyway. Like they just may not be the right person. There may not be good chemistry there.
Thank you. You've mentioned quite a lot of things already that are very interesting, but tell us your 10 commandments for how to close high-end deals.
Sure. I really enjoyed that question because it's something that I don't have 10 commandments, but I did prepare them for this podcast, which I was super excited about being on. I looked at a bunch of your podcasts and you're doing such a great job. So I am glad you took me through this. So I've done some things there in no order of priority. My first one, as I said, we concentrate on speed, so speed wins. Second, trust is earned before you speak. Third, own the frame or lose the deal. And a shout out to Oren Clough at Pitch Anything. He's always talking about framing. I in years past, have read some of his books or two of his books and listened to some of his podcasts. So no deal. The fourth one, no deal, meaning no deal is better than a bad deal. Five, if the answer is not simple, the deal isn't ready. Six, say less and listen more. Seven, urgency is a weapon, so you use it wisely. It can turn on you. We just talked about that. Don't chase, curate the neediness, the essence of being desperate. Nine, lead with certainty and close with calm. And 10, every transaction is a test of reputation.
Wow. You know, when you were saying that, I really felt almost like the vibration in the room change, because I really sense the power of that. Like you, I feel that you live that. And it really shines through. Tell me about what habits would entrepreneurs need to develop, habits, routines, or apps, or so that they can close high-end deals on a recurring basis?
One of the things that is, I think, hard for people in markets that don't use WhatsApp is to realize that so many people, businesses, they're wanting to use WhatsApp and wanting to communicate. If that's too noisy, then move your business communications on WhatsApp to a different device. And of course, like we all are, we're using AI, which is the thing, the word of the day, but ChatGPT has been an amazing tool for all of us, and particularly for me. But I would just highlight those two things. There's of course tons of apps and all of that. And we have our own tech suite for finances and things like that. But those two things are my two key things of the day.
Thank you. For someone who wants to close high-end deals, how can they find targeted people to speak with? And the reason I ask you this is because, for example, I'm always speaking to high-profile business titans, really powerful people like you all day long. And I found that sometimes I get pitched by people who are completely irrelevant. Okay. And what I'm saying is just their topic doesn't fit, not that they're not good people. Okay. And which clearly shows, and a lot of times it's actually by agencies who have not done any research. And I think what they're doing is they're doing this spray and pray approach where they're just like messaging and they're not thinking. And I don't think they have put the proper controls in place. So even if they're using, a custom GPT that is kind of like emailing everyone, they're just like literally emailing everyone without, specific targets in place. What can someone use right now? Is it AI tools? Is it something else that you recommend so they can find targeted multimillionaires or targeted companies that they desire to actually do business with?
I'm not sure I know a credible answer to that question, because thankfully I haven't advised on that issue. So I feel a little not qualified to tell you or to something that would be tangible for your viewers. But I think you're right on the GPT side. There's so many things that are out there that create this noise that you get these pitches, and it's well crafted. Like the emails are great, and the I don't know how they do that one where they say, I'm just going to pop this up to, like, did you get the last one I sent? Well, no, because you didn't send it. But whatever they're doing there, that stuff has no credibility, and most of that stuff gets filtered out on legit email filters. I think it goes to what product you're selling to. Then refine the list. And we always talk about selling to people that we know, but if you're trying to sell to high net worths, then get a few recommendations from your banker.
Oh, that's so interesting. Tell us what is the secret to your success, and what do you feel made you so attractive to these high-end companies and to these high-end deals? What's so special about you that is like your secret sauce that enabled you to become this attractor of so many high-end?
And for clarity, I don't think that the buyers of deals that I've structured had felt like their attraction was to me. I felt like it was to a product that we built and that I had a team behind me that is credible as a team, and that we could solve whatever we talked about this before. High net worth, they don't have any problems. So whatever solution they were looking for. And I think that's key. So I don't feel like I have a particular secret. I feel like we've applied some things here at Raven and at General Holdings that have helped us advance decision-making processes to get to a no fast and get to a yes as fast as we can. And that, as I've mentioned, we try to make hard decisions quickly. When others are stalling, when they're second-guessing, when they're preparing a proposal, we're mobilizing equipment. We're doing the deal. We're cutting the deal. We're having purchase and sale agreements prepped. We're arranging the financing. So we try to move as fast as we possibly can. And I think that builds confidence, not only for the team around you, hopefully for your customers. You've gotten down there, wherever that is, whatever they needed you to do. And then it should also build confidence with shareholders. So I think it's not about having all the answers, but it's about acting decisively. And then, because when you act decisively, there will be mistakes. There will be scaling mistakes. So when you do make a mistake, admit it quickly, remediate it, and then move on.
Thank you. How did you find this power and this fuel to continuously work with such immense speed versus your other potential competitors?
I think that for me, it's a pursuit of clear thinking and being, some people are empowered by a yes or a no. Others are empowered by or enjoy the process of going through an analysis. And I just observed in my own psychology that I like a start and an end to my deals. So because I'm driven by that psychology, I'm also driven by trying to have as much clarity under pressure as I can. And I have been fascinated, just as a person trying to grow my intellect, in these moments where everything is on the line. And I like, you know, bet the house, bet the farm, bet the company deals. And that's given me a lot of energy, knowing that, yeah, we have to close this thing. We have to keep our hands steady, even if it's cold, even if it's hard, when the wind is blowing, when there's no money in the bank, when you don't know how you're going to pay for lunch, or on an extreme basis, when you don't know how you're going to be able to make that big payment that you need to make. And just realizing that each one of those incremental movements is strengthening you and bringing you up to the point where you can do this. I've gotten a lot of strength by that. Just looking back, okay, well, I did that before, so I can do it again.
Thank you. Tell us what kind of companies you're looking to collaborate with at the moment, and where can entrepreneurs find you?
Sure. We're looking to purchase companies that have predictable, replaceable quality of earnings, that are at least generating $1.5 million of net free cash flow every year. And then going up to about $10 million. That's the range of what we're looking for. And not just in America, but we have a foot. Raven, it is a North American based company, and we have a investment thesis that involves the acquisition of companies in Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Illinois, Kansas, and parts of Arkansas, Northwest Arkansas. So those are the places we're looking. You can reach us at RVN, like Raven, RVN.RS, RVN.RS. We'd love to hear from you. And our phone lines are open.
Thank you.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.